Introducing Batiste Sweat-Activated and Touch-Activated Dry Shampoo. With breakthrough technology that absorbs oil and releases bursts of fragrance whenever you sweat or touch your hair for up to 24 hours, it's the ultimate hair care for girls on the go. Try the newest dry shampoo that's activated by you. Batiste, the future of hair care is here. Buy Batiste Dry Shampoo online or in store at your nearest retailer.
You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast, and here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Tennis.com podcast. Thanks for coming back after a little hiatus here. I am Ed McGrogan, catching up with Steve Tignor. We, of course, want to really put a bow on this men's season, Steve, that ended with two events, truthfully, that either one may not have lived up to their original hype, the World Tour Finals in London, the Davis Cup Final in Lille. Both of these events actually had a lot of buzz, I thought, coming in. The World Tour Finals for the battle for number one, among other things. And, of course, the France-Switzerland tie for the title. Really, you couldn't have asked for a much better final than that. Both events really kind of came up flat in certain ways, actually, I thought.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think we thought France, Switzerland, maybe the expectations were too high. I guess just the fact that it was, you had Federer, Wawrinka, and you had a good French team, and you had pretty much an unpredictable outcome that obviously didn't guarantee a great tie. The French were hurt by, you know, first the Swiss were hurt by an injury, Federer's back, and then it turned out the French were even, you know, more disrupted by an injury. Tsonga played poorly the first day and then couldn't even play after that. So, you know, that hurt France's chances. So the World Tour Final, you know, the Davis Cup was a good ending in that, you know, we saw Switzerland win its first Davis Cup. We saw Federer win his first Davis Cup. But, you know, it was not quite what we had hoped for, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's a distinction to be made, too, between, you know, competitive tennis that boils down to the most critical moment, critical match, and you know, separating that from drama, which certainly both these events still had a lot of, though it was more from perhaps what happened off court than on court. But, you know, the one player really who figure the most prominent player, of course, who figures into both these is Roger Federer, and I'm just wondering, you know, if his decision to pull out of the World Tour Final championship match against Novak Djokovic, if he really justified that by his performance, particularly in the last 2 days of the Davis Cup, or do you think that decision ever needed to be, you know, justified by any performance in the first place? Because that, you know, that was such a controversial move for a lot of reasons.
Well, I guess, I mean, he doesn't pull out very often, if ever, so I don't think he was doing it. You know, you can speculate about whether he would have done it if Davis Cup hadn't been played that week. I don't know, you know. I do think he takes the World Tour Final seriously. He's in the ATP leadership and knows that that's their biggest tournament, the biggest tournament they own and run, and that I don't think he would pull out of that lightly, even with Davis Cup coming up. I mean, I don't think he justified it I don't think you look back and think he was right for pulling out and being careful because he won the last match in Davis Cup. I think he had to do it. You just hope he did what he had to do on that Sunday in London, and then he got better through the week and was okay after playing. I mean, really, his back got better once he played. That seemed to loosen it up. He was okay by the third set of his first match. So, you know, who knows? Maybe if he had tried to play in London on Sunday, it would have been the same situation the following weekend.
No, that's a good point you make about match play really being the best practice for Federer, because you know, against Monfils in his opening match on Friday, this was clearly not anything like the Roger Federer that Switzerland was counting on, or anybody really expected. It was a really one-sided match, and you know, to me, I was kind of surprised to hear that he would be playing the doubles, only because it was just that, you know, lopsided and really uncompetitive. And I think once I heard that Wawrinka and Federer were getting the call in doubles, I think immediately at that point I started to think about really the way the tie could go a little differently, because, you know, right after that Monfils match, you're almost kind of wondering if Switzerland can even get to the fifth rubber and try to get to Wawrinka, who looks so good on the first day. And obviously we come to find out that's a little owing to Tsonga, but that, you know, that was the perception of how things were going after day one, and you know, the tie just completely sort of changed momentum right away, I thought.
Yeah, I think you have to look at, you know, you'll have to also have to look at Wawrinka's role winning that first match, you know, sort of keeping Switzerland in it the first day, and then, you know, I think his positivity, his aggressive play in doubles, that really, you know, even Federer said that inspired him and helped him. He probably had to like Wawrinka to win the fifth rubber anyway, the way he'd been playing. Monfils had been playing well, of course, but Stan seemed to be, you know, really to be dialed in and be, you know, aggressively going after that. So I think he, you know, in that sense, it was a team effort. Wawrinka won. They won in doubles, and then Federer won.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of Wawrinka, I think now we really look back at this season as a whole, and you know, despite, you know, Federer finishing number two in the rankings, I think you can make a great case that, you know, aside from Djokovic, you know, this was really Stan Wawrinka's year overall. He wins his first slam. He also wins a very solid Masters event. All of them are, but you know, particularly on clay, beats Federer in that final. And he bookends it with this Davis Cup win, I think, really, you know, just desserts for all the, you know, all the various ties that he's played over the years, you know, when Federer wasn't always up for the you know, the sporadic month by month competition. Wawrinka was Switzerland's, you know, top guy, and I think, you know, overall this is really going to be remembered as a you know, the career year of Stan Wawrinka, and for good reason.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think it's a year that's going to lead to him becoming number one or winning a lot more Grand Slams. I think he still had a really streaky year, had a great start and a great end, and a lot of ups and downs in between. But I think it showed him, or also how good he can be when he's going well. You know, his upside is higher than it's ever been. And, you know, I think that he'll continue to be a threat in that way, if not a consistent threat.
And, you know, I'm not sure if you thought of this. It wasn't anything I was thinking about. I kind of really like to savor the few morsels of time that we have in between the tennis seasons, but with a couple days removed for that, you know, do you expect Federer Wawrinka to continue playing Davis Cup next year? Because it does, I think, at face value seem like, you know, the ultimate sort of one year, everything sort of came together in the right way for Switzerland. I think this speaks more to Federer in particular at his age and what he is still surely aiming for from a personal level, you know, during the season. But, you know, do you expect this team to, you know, mount a defense of their Davis Cup at all?
I guess it just depends on, you know, Stan. From Stan's perspective, he's the guy who's been there all the ties, all of these years. He may feel like he deserves a break and needs a break from it. Federer, judging by his past, you probably would say he won't play again, because he's played before this year, he'd played one world group, one main draw tie in 10 years. You know, he typically doesn't play that opening tie in February. And it would be surprising if he did play. It's possible that he's in the spirit of the team now, and he would continue, I would bet that they wouldn't, neither of them would play the first round tie next year, but we'll see. You know, we'll see what this win meant to them and if that changed their minds.
Right. Yeah. You know, on the flip side, I really kind of wonder where this whole experience leaves the French team. That, you know, the country, of course, puts so much stock into Davis Cup. You know, their depth is just lauded by everyone. And, you know, now I think you look at this tie and you can kind of really, you know, you really have to kind of think about, is depth the key to Davis Cup, or is, you know, just having two spectacular players that can play singles and perhaps doubles? Because, you know, on the whole, I thought this was a pretty poor showing, you know, on their part. And you can go from perhaps some of Arnaud Clément's decision-making in the captain's seat to Gasquet's performance perhaps in both the singles and doubles, you know, to Song, of course, who we find out has, you know, is certainly hampered by injury there. But, you know, really the only one who comes off looking okay in this whole thing is Monfils, and I kind of wonder where this really leaves France right now. I think this one stinks for them.
Yeah, this is a tough one. This generation they were in the final in 2010. They lost a fifth rubber there. Now they've lost another one. It's been a great generation for the French, and you're right, though, the depth, when you can only have four players on a team, that kind of depth goes, you know, not necessarily that useful. They had Gilles Simon sitting on the bench for the final match. He couldn't play. He hadn't been named to the team. He might have been the best guy to play that match against Federer, but they had to go with Gasquet because you can only have four. So I think it is a pretty big disappointment. It's the third straight final they've lost. They haven't won since 2001. Obviously, tennis in the Davis Cup is a big deal there. I think you have to, you know, you also have issues now with people second guessing what Clément did, who he chose for this tie. Should he have gone with Gasquet? Should he have gone with someone else? But, you know, it's hindsight is 20/20. Gasquet and Sanga had been really good in the semifinals and had won all the matches there, and I thought that was the right move to go with them. So
it was quite a celebration in the purported away arena for Switzerland after winning the Davis Cup too. You wouldn't have expected that fireworks or not that, but quite a bit going on there for the away team winning.
Yeah. They had a big crowd. You know, it was a pretty bitter weekend for the French. Even Tsonga didn't, you know, even criticize the crowd. So it was all pretty much a disaster they're going to want to forget.
Yes. Yeah. Clearly. How about, I think some other maybe final kind of takeaways that you have after this, you know, really these past 2 weeks have been, you know, the end of the tennis season from London over to the Davis Cup final. You know, I'm kind of maybe wondering, one person we haven't mentioned in all of this, of course, is Djokovic, who wins London via walkover. I think you made a nice point in really the London wrap-up piece that, you know, really the only survivor in that whole week was Djokovic. But beyond that, it's looking at his year as a whole, and if we're really perhaps undervaluing and, you know, really overlooking some really his run of consistency over the past 4 years and how he's, you know, clearly put himself in the conversation, you know, amongst the all-time greats. And, you know, I think many people would, of course, say that Djokovic is still in his peak years, and really, you know, these next couple of years are even greater opportunities for him to really just build, you know, what he's already done. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, obviously such a great player, you know, playing right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's only 28. He seems like he's been around forever. Part of that is that when you look back over his seasons, he's so consistently in the late rounds of tournaments. He's always there, you know. Even this year, he finishes number one. It's not his best year or his most dominant he won Wimbledon, but he also, you know, he won Indian Wells, he won Miami, he won Rome. He was in the final in Shanghai, or in the semis in Shanghai. He won the World Tour final. Like, he's, you know, sort of taken for granted. He's always going to be there, at least in the semis or the final. But going into the new year, I think it's a good time for the ATP, and that Djokovic is there. He's number one. He's not completely dominant. Federer, you know, he played some of his best. Tennis at the end of the year. He's number two. Nadal will be back, and we know he's good when he's, you know, when he comes back healthy. Wawrinka's coming in to you know, after a good end of the season, and so is Murray, despite the World Tour final. He had a good run at the end of the year. So I think in that sense it's a pretty solid and open top five right now heading into, you know, at the end of this year, heading into 2015.
Yep, you have all those guys. You of course really have a younger crop too. There's about four or five of them, including Dimitrov, Nishikori, Raonic, who will really see. I think all made some nice strides this year, and we'll see really what more they can do with obviously some added expectations. But time will be on their side a little bit. But that brings us back to really the question about really what we see. How long this quartet, really takes ownership of the tour at the top there. But I think obviously there are a lot more questions that we have to ask about the men's tour at this point of the year. I think we had a lot of those questions on the women's tour coming in, and really the year of the WTA was, I thought, a very satisfying year where, it wasn't, Serena Williams, for example, wasn't the ultimate, winner in every tournament she played. Far from it, in fact, at the Slams. But I thought overall it was a very compelling women's season. I think that's perhaps, what we got on the men's, on the ATP side in a way, and it could be obviously a bit of foreshadowing for what's to come. And so that, I think, we will put our bow on the season here as we make our way toward the holiday season. So, Steve, we will be catching up later in the month to kind of really go over 2015, what we think about what will be coming up on both tours. As we say, there's a lot to digest and think about there. So we will catch up then, and we'll catch up with you at that time. Thank you once again for listening to the Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.